Badger Patch. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Welcome to the princes that were promised. Shawnee Wan, John, we're back. Reading Game of Thrones, you get a historical perspective on Robert's Rebellion and on the Battle of the Trident. And you get this perspective based on a few character point of views, some stories that some characters tell other characters. And it's not really until maybe the end of Game of Thrones, probably more like the publication of A Feast for Crows, we understand that George Martin isn't giving us the whole story when he has a character tell a story. Point of views are generally skewed. So unless we read about it, it happens like live in a chapter. What I'm saying is it's dangerous to trust what a character says. If you see something happen to a character, that's generally true because it's happening to that point of view character. But if it's something a character says, it's reported that Davos is beheaded and his good hand and his bad hand and his head are hanging above White Harbor. It's reported. It's a perfect example. You hear that in Feast for Crows that Davos has been killed. Stannis right. Said so. But then you know that that's not true. It was a ruse. I think by that point in time, readers were getting smart to George's style. If you don't see it happen, it didn't necessarily happen. Mm-hmm. You'd agree with that. But my point being is when you go back to Game of Thrones, the first person that you hear about Robert's Rebellion from is really Robert. Mm-hmm. You hear about the war and how it changed things, maybe from some other characters, but an actual account of what happens during Robert's Rebellion, specifically what happens on the Trident, you get from Robert. So my question to you was, do you think that there's more characters that are giving us a false sense, a false account of what really happened at the Trident in your Game of Thrones, Clash of Kings, Storm of Swords, with that original group of characters? And then when you get these new characters in Feast for Crows, Dance of Dragons, the accounts they give of Robert's Rebellion, do you think there's more truth to those later accounts?
Yes. I'll tell you why. Because as the story goes on, you're going to find out more and more of the truth. So the barometer is going to start out like, not so true, not so true, not so true. May elements of truth, may elements of truth, again, true again, true. You know, it's like a barometer. As the story is going to go on, and when these books do eventually come out, more of the actual truth and the actual events of what took place is going to come out.
Yeah.
It's okay. Not going to be like the hearsay that we hear from. Right. Simply a guy like Robert Baratheon was very bitter and, you know.
And it's probably changed events of war to suit his own internal narrative of what happened.
Which, of course, he even admits to later on in book one when he says, when basically he comes to that realization. We've talked about the line here before, you know, damn it, Ned, I killed him. I thrusted my warhammer up his bloody heart and I killed him. They wrote songs about it. Mm-hmm. But in the end, he even comes to realization. In the end, Rachel, he won.
Yeah.
He has Lyanna now, and I have her. So even he knows that he was always telling himself this lie to make himself feel better.
A lie in the reason for the war. He did kill Rhaegar. There's nobody that has disputed that. Nobody's saying Rhaegar's still alive or that Robert Baratheon is really dead. He killed Rhaegar on the Trident. That's true. But everything that surrounds it, the reason why they came to blows and why they went to war, that's taken on a new life as the story goes on.
Basically, what you were saying was, even though I killed him, I know the truth. And the truth burns me because, basically, Lyanna chose him. He comes to that realization that Lyanna chose.
He kills him every night, but he's still won the war.
He's still there because he knows how many times I kill him, how many times I think back to that day and smash my warhammer on
him. Lyanna chose him.
Nothing I can do about it.
Robert's Rebellion is the historical event upon which Song of Ice and Fire is based, right?
I just want to, before you get on,
then I go right,
the biggest plot hole, non-question of this series that George does not have anyone ask, nor bring up, he never has or mentions, wouldn't you think Robert would want to know how Lyanna died?
We've talked about that before. It's
why? Because George he can't say it. And I guess he doesn't have anything. He doesn't want to write as a lie.
When you say plot hole, is it something that you can't?
George can't say it because it'll be too much.
Right. Can you in your own head? Can you make it make sense in your own head?
Right. And then, I don't know if he can't come up with a good enough lie. I mean, what's Eddard going to say? Oh, yeah, Rhaegar stabbed. You know, Eddard would just be lying to himself. And then when he'd kill him, a guy like, you know, Eddard, it's never brought up. Yeah. It's never even brought up. Jamie doesn't bring it up. anyone who's from that timeline that was old enough does not bring it up to Ned or ask about, well, how did Lyanna Stark die? It's never brought up.
Maybe it is just not touched on in the books. I could see Ned not being able to lie to Robert about how she died, knowing he would have to. So maybe he sent a raven saying, Lyanna's gone. I could see him saying it would kill him, but saying, like, Rhaegar killed him.
It's kind of feel like it's in Goodfellas. And she's dead. There's nothing we can do about it. And that's that.
Well, the only thing is Robert does say how many times he raped her. But doesn't he say that Rhaegar raped and killed your sister?
The way I took it from that line was that Robert was suggesting that Rhaegar raped her so many times that it killed her.
Okay.
If you got raped that brutally raped.
Yeah, I took her own life or something.
Never really did any much research or thankfully I've never seen, you know, you've seen things like on movies, but that doesn't give anything justice to what real women at these sometimes do go through. But
well, it sounds like he would assume that Rhaegar killed her. And his thought process was already there, so he just needed a little pushing in that direction. Problem is, I don't see Ned lying to disgrace a dead man. But if Robert believes that without Ned suggesting anything,
right?
I can see Ned just not saying anything.
Robert says, yeah, Lyanna died, and okay, Robert can come up with his own imagination of how Rhaegar did this and how Rhaegar killed her or something like that, maybe, and just leave it at that. But it is never brought up.
Maybe more important out of this is that if Robert's not asking, Ned's gone for a while from when he leaves King's Landing, Storm's End, to the Tower of Joy.
He goes to the North. He doesn't stop at King's Landing again.
Well, meanwhile, Robert is dealing with Tywin Lannister, and he knows that Lyanna's dead by this point in time because there's a marriage alliance with Cersei. I'm not sure when that takes place, but it has to. I mean, Tywin has to have this idea. If he's allowing Robert to become king, he must know that he's going to get Robert to marry Cersei so that he can, you know, be pulling the strings from behind the scenes. Robert must be busy with all the things involved with becoming a king, ruling the realm, taking that over. So it may be something where he's not even thinking of her anymore. And we talked about that with the war in general, where it seemed that it was less and less about Lyanna as it went on and more about Robert becoming king, a war of conquest. So that doesn't look good for Robert that he's forgotten about her so much that he's not even concerned with when she died. But maybe all it took was a raven saying, she's gone, Robert. I'm bringing her bones to Winterfell. Ned wouldn't have to say anything. Robert would jump to the conclusion that Rhaegar did it and honestly probably be not at peace with that, but at that point in time, while he's young and has this possible marriage betrothal to Cersei Lannister, who at that time was hot, I can see Robert accepting that and moving on, at least for the time being. You could call it a plot hole because it's a major event and
that's brushed over. It's like,
It's not even addressed. But you can kind of make it right in your head. You just have to accept some things. But all of A Song of Ice and Fire, the whole saga rests on Robert's Rebellion. It's like that war is what leads to the events of A Song of Ice and Fire, and a lot of the conflicts in A Song of Ice and Fire go back to Robert's Rebellion. And when Martin first presents the accounts of Robert's Rebellion, we don't learn this till later, but he presents them almost falsely, incorrectly, despite the characters that are particularly Robert that are giving this account, believing that that's how events happened. So kind of along those lines, who would you say, particularly in A Game of Thrones, but overall in The Song of Ice and Fire, I think I know what your answer is going to be. Who would you argue is the most trustworthy point of view, the most trustworthy narrator?
Eddard.
Right? Maybe you could say Tyrion, maybe you could say the kids because they look at things so innocently, but they don't have the scope of memory that Ned has. It's Ned, but he doesn't remember the rebellion. Like, he never thinks about it in his waking thought.
Too much pain for him.
Right.
Ned, they need all his sons. And he named Rob after Robert, named Bran after Brandon, Rickon for, in a way, about Rickard, gives the name John to John for John Arryn.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you go with the girls' names, you have Sansa, which has never been, I don't think, was there ever a Sansa Stark? Said, like, how come, well, you know, he doesn't name his daughters Lyanna? Well, he doesn't want
it. It's painful as hell,
He can't do that because it's bad enough he has her son there.
Mm-hmm. And Arya reminds him of Lyanna.
Yeah. It's like that time you remember you were telling me, and I heard it too, when Arya is practicing sword fighting with Celia Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
The counter pans on Ned, and you can almost hear real
The battle of the land.
And I think that's Ned thinking back to the Tower of Joy. That's what I think.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. At first, I thought it was like Ned remembering the war and seeing his daughter fight, and then all of a sudden getting worried for it. But no, it's thinking back to the Tower of Joy, thinking back to that fight. And I would wager, if you went back to that episode, it was the pointy end, right?
Episode 67 it was.
Pretty sure it was the one that Martin wrote. But if you go back to that episode and you listen to what Ned is hearing in his head as he watches Arya practice with Cyril Farrell, Well, maybe not, but I would think that it's similar to the fighting that we hear in the Tower of Joy scenes.
Yeah, you know? Was he saying something? Was Cyril Farrell saying something to Arya?
That I don't remember. It was more like the usual stuff that he said to her, and Ned came in and he was watching her, and then I think he sat down and he was watching her.
He was standing up with the camera pans, and his face turns like...
It's like a slow zoom in on his face.
And, right, and he's like happy for a minute that she's enjoying herself, then all of a sudden it's like...
Pride, and then he connects the dots, and all those feelings that he keeps pushing out come flooding back. So yeah, he is definitely the most trustworthy narrator, but he doesn't think of it at all. It's interesting though, because looking back at the Game of Thrones, probably the most honest account of anything that happens during Robert's Rebellion, if you consider the events of Tower of Joy, Robert's Rebellion, that's probably the most accurate account of anything that happens at that time. And it's from Ned, but it's in a dream. It's not him thinking of it. So it's funny that looking back, his dream is more accurate than what Robert talks about basically the whole book, killing Rhaegar and thinking about the Trident. And I think we've talked about this before also, but when we first meet Robert in A Game of Thrones and he's talking about Rhaegar and he's talking about Lyanna getting kidnapped and raped and him killing Rhaegar, but Lyanna was already dead, knowing that you're not a fan of Robert Baratheon, can you remember back to the first time? Well, I know you watched the TV show first, mm-hmm. but when you first heard Robert Baratheon talking about the Trident, Rhaegar
Targaryen.
Did you believe his version of the events?
You know, and I'll honest, when I first saw the episode, you know, the name Rhaegar, it doesn't sound like a flowing good name. So I was kind of agreeing with him that this guy Rhaegar didn't sound like a good guy.
Sounds like a bad guy
name. Right. But at the same time, the first time I saw Robert Baratheon, I also to myself, there's something I don't like about this guy. There's something about this guy that he's king. He really shouldn't be king. Like, there's just something about, like, he was big. He had the freaking stump to help get him off his horse, you know, to live. I just felt that there was something about him that he was not deserving in his own right to be king. Like, he got the kingship wrongly or something.
It's almost like the way he presents Rhaegar as, like, his arch nemesis, this horrible, horrible man.
And he's how he not defeated presented him. Also, he's not presented, and he's not carrying himself as this.
The opposite, as the good guy, right.
He looks...
Drinking and whoring.
Like a slob.
So if Rhaegar's as evil as Robert's making him sound, he does that to make himself feel like he's the knight in shining armor.
Right.
He's not. You can tell he most certainly is not.
Another quick note. All know who, you know, my favorite character, obviously, is Jon. My least favorite character, if you don't know by now, is Catelyn Tully. Quick sidebar on that first episode when I watched at your house. There is that scene in the court, in the Winterfell courtyard, where the boys are practicing with Bran with the arrows and all that.
Right.
Ned gets the whole notion that the man, the Night's Watch fled. Then there's that scene where Jon looks up at Catelyn and she's staring at Jon.
Right.
I thought that they were having an affair.
Yeah.
I really like, oh, don't tell me he's banging the freaking mom.
Typical HBO.
Right. That's why I thought. I was just like, this is like, then how cool, thank God that wasn't the case.
Ah, Jesus, imagine.
And in the show, I think this was the show's way that they did not want to paint Catelyn Tully so much like the villainous creep that she is in the books. The scene where Jon is saying goodbye to Bran, in the books, she's a lot worse to Jon.
Oh, she's horrible to him.
Should have been you. Oh, this is so bad. I think when I first saw two seasons, I was getting to the point where I wasn't much of a fan of hers. Mm. But when you read the book, you really can't stand it because of that scene.
Well, because of that scene, but at the same time, at least she kind of gets to defend herself in the books because she has her own point of view. But even with her own point of view, still the fucking worst. If Robert Baratheon's account of the Rebellion, particularly the Trident, is the main account we have in Game of Thrones, over the next four books, we do get some other accounts. They're few and far between, but we get some other accounts that don't quite contradict Robert's. But for example, when we get Jaime point of views and he remembers killing Aerys. Baris and Selmy's point of view.
Where he talks about Rhaegar in a good way.
Tywin talking about it. John Connington remembering things. They don't all directly contradict what Robert's saying, so Robert's not lying, but they add more dimension to it.
I mean, it's the whole Tom Zarek thing, but I'm also going to use, it's the old Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, Obi-Wan, when he tells Luke, from a certain point of view. We need a certain view. When you get to find the man, the truth between you depends greatly on our own point of view. Just like Roger Billy, on someone's point of view. You can look at it this way, and someone else can look at it that way from their own point of view.
That's what the truth is. And that's what they'll present as the truth because that's what they believe. But like I said, these other point of views, they don't contradict Robert's, but they also paint Rhaegar in a different picture and paint House Targaryen in a different picture. By the time you're reading A Feast for Crows, Dance with Dragons, if you don't realize that accounts of things that have happened in the past aren't always accurate, then you're really not paying attention. And going back to like Ned's dream of the Tower of Joy, like I just think that's the most interesting part of all of it is that the most truthful accounts that we get of really anything that's happened in the past is through a dream or through the Weirwood Tree. But it's never a firsthand account of what's happened.
I'm going to stop you real quick. I just want to bring something up.
And this go for it.
I've thought about and no one seems to really catch it. We know Cersei has the dream of the prophecy, the Maggot of the Frog prophecy. Sean, if you can remember how that paragraph starts off.
She dreamed an old dream, right?
Right.
Yeah. Same as Ned.
He dreamed an old dream.
Yeah.
Now, many people, when she dreams that dream of the Maggot of the Frog prophecy, okay, they insist that, well, it's not a dream, it's a prophetic dream that she's dreaming of prophecy. Which is true, which is okay. Right, which is true. But how come we see, my point of view on it is, Ned's also having a prophetic dream, the prince that was promised prophecy. He's dreaming it. Promise Ned, the prince that was promised.
That's pretty interesting.
Knowing, we just take it as Ned having a dream, but for Cersei, although it starts off the same, she dreamt an old dream, he dreamt an old dream. On Cersei, we look at it as a prophetic dream, whereas Ned, he's just dreaming.
They are both events that have happened. They're both dreaming of things that happened in the past that haunt them. That's pretty cool. Good catch, me. When did you figure that one out?
A few years ago, someone was talking about it. And I'm like, you look at one thing one way, but we don't look for it the other way. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, it makes sense that Ned's dream is also a prophetic dream. But at that point, we don't really know much about prophecy. It's really like the fourth book, and all of a sudden,
we have
high prophecies. We have the, what's going on with Dany and all this. Now we're getting accustomed to prophecies. We're going to label Cersei's dream as a prophecy.
We're not thinking back to Ned's
dream. We're not thinking back to Ned's dream as a prophecy, but it is actually a prophetic dream.
That's fucking cool, man.
Very, very cool. Let's take a break there and regroup ourselves, and we will be right back. The Winds of Winter, one of my favorites from Raman Devardi, played over Cersei's big scene at the end of season 6 when she blows up Baelor Sept.
Listen, getting back to the timeline of the Battle of the Trident, we know that this is the decisive battle, but at the time, the Rebels know it's a big victory. Because they killed Rhaegar, and they have the Dornish men, the Targaryen loyalists, they're all retreating and fleeing back to King's Landing. But there's still a lot of work for them to do. They're not looking at it, all right, Larry, we won the war, because they still would have to take King's Landing. They still don't know what Tywin Lannister's doing. And as soon as they win this victory, they get word that Tywin Lannister is marching from the Westerlands. And keep in mind, they don't know what kind of communication Aerys has had with Tywin, but they know they've reached out to Tywin. And they have heard nothing. Tywin's just stayed silent the whole time. Do you think that the rebels, obviously not Robert, but Hoster Tully, Jon Arryn, what do you think that the thought process is at this time?
I have a feeling you're going to ask me that question.
Well, do you think that they were like, all right, this is a crushing blow. Let's sue for peace. Or do you think they're like, we got to follow this through all the way?
I mean, at that point, you got to follow through to King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the wild card is, what is Tywin going to do? We talked about that, a few episodes ago. What is he going to do? Are we going to go down there? Is this going to be another fight? Is this going to be a fight that we can win? Because Tywin's going to have a whole bunch of fresh troops.
Fight Tywin, because they don't know that Tywin's going to do what Tywin does.
Mm-hmm.
Tough spot. Like, yeah, it's a big victory, but it's still like we're able to look at it as the deciding point in the war because Rhaegar is killed. But you got to think in their point of view, like Rhaegar was probably, if they were going to sue for peace, Rhaegar was probably their best chance at that because Aerys is psychotic. Because Rhaegar seemed like he was forward-thinking and understanding.
I think at that point, if you definitely look at it as Aerys is still alive, and then at this point, they know Aerys is still alive. Mm-hmm. War has not gone out that Jaime's done what he's done, or going to do, obviously. To go down there to the fight, because now we killed the prince, but the king is still alive. The real main guy that really started all this up is still alive. The crazy wackadoo that we've had our doubts about for the past 2-3 years that we tried to maybe possibly overthrow is still alive. We're going to have to go down there, and we might have to face Tywin Lannister and the Lannisters.
It's a very real possibility.
We don't know what we're going to do.
And they know Tywin, so they can't really sue for peace, because you can't trust Tywin, and you got to know that Tywin, you haven't heard from Tywin. Tywin's, whatever he's going to do, he's thought it out.
Right.
Several times.
And as I just said, the Lannister army, you got to think the rebellion is glory, because the Lannister army, if it is going to attack the rebellion, is for a fresh army.
Yeah.
These guys, they've battled. They've been
traveling a lot.
They're going to be tired. So this is an advantage.
Whatever side of Tywin chooses.
Yeah. And when they get down there, obviously, it's just like,
the war's already
going. We are a team!
Well, essentially, they think they have a lot of war left to fight, but for the rebels, that was the final battle. They're not going to fight anymore. Tywin's going to take it from here. I was thinking about another way to look at Rhaegar being killed, and I was talking about this with John Connaughton. PR is a bad word, but he wanted a young, strong hand because the small folk were falling in love with Robert and his story and Robert's rebellion. So he thought John Connaughton would be the perfect match because he's young and handsome also. When Rhaegar falls at the Trident, he was loved by the small folk, and he was respected by most High Lords. Say what you will about how they felt after he quote-unquote abducted Lyanna.
And his own people still fought for him, even after all that.
People still fight for him in A Song of Ice and Fire. John Connaughton's still fighting for him.
One of the greatest things, the show that have a good tendency of putting in some foreshadowing lines, and we hear in Rhaegar in the book, thanks to how Barristan in the book, and in the show, you know, when Rhaegar fought the Trident, you know, the people fought for him because they believed in him, because they loved him. Not because he had dragons and, right, you know, all this power. They wanted him to win. You fast forward that to last year, when Davos is talking about Jon Snow, he's telling Dany the same thing Barristan was telling about Rhaegar. He's saying this guy was able to get the Northmen and the Free Folk together, which no one else had done, because you know what they, because you know why they do it, because they believe in him. He doesn't have a brother; he has none. They do it because they believe in him. That's gonna be so epic next. Well, a year and a half from now, that comes out finally to the whole entire realm.
Yeah, I don't know. In all these leaks that we're reading, though, it doesn't seem like it does.
Right, but that's why they get spanned fact. Because yeah. I think if you're the show, I think you're on a gold mine.
That you can't show that.
Think about this. Yeah. That's why I think it's all fanfic.
Go back for a minute to while Rhaegar is alive, and when he returns to King's Landing from the Tower of Joy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he calms his father down, but he tells his father to reach out to Tywin. Then he leads the loyalists north to the Riverlands. It's got to be a deliberate choice of words. Aerys sends a raven to Tywin, but he doesn't ask for help. He commands Tywin to return to King's Landing. He commands his warden of the West to come to King's Landing and defend his king. That had to have rubbed Tywin the wrong way, the command. Do you think if Aerys came at, if he approached Tywin a little bit differently, a little more respectfully, we know that Tywin's been burned by Aerys, and not even considering Aerys and Joanna Lannister.
You're saying, if he came out, like, listen.
Could not command
him. I know him. Listen, I need you now. Whatever happens after the war, we'll mend. We'll figure something out. But I need you now for this war. Maybe. But I still kind of think that Tywin was just in. He knew. Tywin's a smart man. I think he knew that basically shit's going down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think no matter what, I think he.
Well, that's my follow-up question. If Tywin had sided them with Aerys,
the rebellion's crushed.
Right? I mean, if Tywin marches to the Trident to help Rhaegar, the rebels aren't winning that battle. Or if they reach King's Landing and they're greeted by the Lannister army, probably not winning that battle.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he sat out this war, it did come down to what Tywin Lannister chose to do. Then you think about stupid Mace Tyrell over at Storm's End, and he's got a similarly sized army. Mm-hmm. Has to have close to as much funds as the Lannisters, if not more. So he could have made just as much a difference. I just think that's crazy. That Tywin can make that much difference and Mace Tyrell's sitting back at
Storm's End. Laying in the weeds.
Yeah.
I know you made mention of how the Martells got back in the fold with the Targaryens and that Ellie would still be promised as the queen.
Mm-hmm.
The more I thought about it, the more two things stood out to me. I mean, we don't know. I doubt that was Rhaegar who made that. I have to think that was Aerys who made that agreement. Don't worry. Ellie is still the queen.
Okay, or just to reiterate, Dorne Martell is furious when he learns that Rhaegar ran off with Lyanna because it's a slight to Ilya.
Just real quick, though, mm-hmm. coming from Dorne, the ones that have all kinds of, you know,
right.
it's kind of like hypocritical for Dorne. I mean, I understand he's upset. I get it. I do. I get when, you know, when your sister's the queen and princess, and this is kind of like a power play, but this isn't just a normal fling. This involves the prince. This involves airships and all that. I understand yeah. that this is it's a different level, but still a little bit hypocritical.
A little bit. So he's furious. I'm furious.
I'm going to plan something right now. Yeah. It's going to take me 30 years.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. But all he does is hold back his troops. He's slow to send them to aid Aerys. And it is until Rhaegar arrives at King's Landing. And then there's some kind of discourse between Doran and the Iron Throne, be it Rhaegar, be it Aerys, that Dorne will send, was it 12,000 Dornish men, with the understanding that Elia will be the Queen of Westeros. Meanwhile, Aerys is reminding Dorne that Elia is at King's Landing under his protection, so you better stay true to me because I have Elia, a hostage situation. I don't think Dorne would have taken that the wrong way. He would have seen what Aerys was saying with, let me remind you that Elia's here. Dorne would have realized what he was doing. So he probably would have sent the troops anyway, but the understanding that Elia would be queen is what messes up the annulment argument.
Just
what
you're saying it's is... It's just a matter of who it comes by. If it comes by Rhaegar, then yay.
Who agreed to it.
I'm going to assume, and I could be wrong on this, that comes from that Aerys or someone else except for Rhaegar makes that agreement, because Aerys is just like, I need men. We've talked about all throughout the talk of the Robert's Rebellion is they didn't fully understand the capabilities of rebellion, you know, growing and growing and growing. And now at this point, it's like, oh, crap. We need as many people as we possibly can. I got my main man, Mace Tyrell, out there sipping the red wine.
Yeah.
I need men. But of course, Celia is going to be the queen. Don't worry about it. She's married. Don't worry about it.
She's married to the prince, isn't she?
Yeah. I need your men. You know? Yeah. I need the men.
Well, if you want that prince to be king, you better send the men.
Right.
If you want that prince to be king and then his wife, your sister, to be the queen, you better send the men.
Listen, I'm going to lean more towards that of his Aerys. But then again, the second thing is we've talked about the wedding, the sort of final finale of season 7. Whether it was a moment, whether it was a second marriage with Rhaegar, in some way, fashion, it's a legitimized wedding. Jon is legitimized. There's no reason why Jarl Hightower stays behind. I just can't. With two of the Kingsguard members
no,
there.
No, and we've gone through that. There's
whether there was an annulment, a second wedding, there was a legitimization there. At that time, when with Aerys, Rhaegar, and Aegon dead, and never mind that Kingsguard was guarding the king.
Well, especially considering that Aerys was alive and he only had one Kingsguard at King's Landing while they're at war. And it was Jaime, who's like the youngest, newest Kingsguard member. And if you really think about that, maybe you could use the word plot hole. Plot hole. We will be right back. Like, momentarily. We're going to regroup. And we're going to be right back.
The Princes. That Were Promised
is an action-packed production. Subscribe
to The Princes That Were Promised
via iTunes, Google Play Store, Stitcher. Send us a raven on Twitter at
Princes Promised.
Bend the Knee on Facebook
at facebook.com/The Promised Princes.
Read, enjoy, and learn from our scholarly essays at
theprincesthatwerepromised.com.
Journey with us to the Red Keep at
thepromisedprinces.actionpactpodcasts.com.
And thank you for listening.
As we move ahead in the timeline during this part of Robert's Rebellion, which we are calling, well, we're not calling it the Sack of King's Landing. It's just called the Sack of King's Landing. So as we're moving forward during the Sack of King's Landing, there's so many different things happening at the same time, and each thing has to do with the other thing. The point being, we're going to repeat ourselves a little bit just to keep you guys abreast, keep us abreast of where we're at and what's going on. Aerys sends a raven to Casterly Rock and commands Tywin to come and help him. Instead of asking like a friend, he commands him. And they get no response, but Rhaegar's already marched north to his fate. The Battle of the Trident is over and done with. The rebels have won, but Robert has been wounded. And it's not a grievous wound. It's not a wound that's going to kill him, but it's kind of pussy, if you ask me. Especially, this is war. But he, I guess...
Since Eddard, he'll go down, yeah. you know...
I guess he just let the killer
go. If Tywin was going to go against him, Arrow would be killed. And Robert would be like, oh, I'm going to go escape east or someplace and go to Essos or something.
Well, that's actually pretty interesting because before they start off, what they do is Robert sends Eddard in his place to chase the loyalists to King's Landing. You would chase the loyalists as you don't want them actually reach King's Landing and set up a defense for you. You want to chase them so it's chaos and this army is literally running away from the pursuing army. You can kill some of them along the way, but you don't want them to reach King's Landing and have the gates shut on you and have like even half a day to prepare for your arrival. But as they're getting ready, Robert tells Ned he's going to have to pursue them. He's going to have to take command of the vanguard. As they're getting ready to go, they get word that Tywin Lannister has marched from Casterly Rock. So now it's kind of interesting because, yeah, they don't know what side he's going to be on. What if he is on Arya's side? Robert's like, all right, Ned, you go. You lead the vanguard. Let me know how it goes. I just beat Rhaegar Targaryen. It's not getting any better than this. Yeah, send me a raven. Let me know
how it goes. If I see blood on the note, I know you died.
Tywin Lannister and the forces of the Westerlands are marching towards King's Landing. The Loyalist army is retreating and racing back for King's Landing, and Ned Stark is pursuing them with the vanguard of the rebels. You're Aerys Targaryen, you're sitting on the Iron Throne. Before we talk about the wildfire plot, is there any way that you can turn this around where you are right now, if you're Aerys Targaryen?
If I'm him, probably not. If you're crazy, yeah, there's not, I don't think there's anything you can think of to do.
Yeah. Do you think escape? I mean, we know he sends his wife and his son, but what if he escaped with them?
Basically, why didn't he escape? Because he feared he had to be the king?
Honestly, I think he had a death wish because of the wildfire plot.
Well, I guess what it was, I'm basically lost. I'm not going to be king anymore. And if I'm not going to be king, no one's going to be king because I'm blowing this shit up.
Right. The traitors want my city, but I'll give them naught but ashes. Let Robert be king over charred bones and cooked meat. Pretty badass quote. Basically saying like, all right, yeah, so you want your realm. You can be the king, but you're going to rule over literally nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just before Tywin Lannister arrives at King's Landing, the wildfire plot comes to fruition. And if you recall, Arya started planning his wildfire plot with the victory Robert had at the Battle of the Bells. That's when Arya's looked at him as a legit threat to House Targaryen's legacy.
I better have something like in store for these guys.
Right. I better have like a plan B, a plan C. With three pyromancers from the Alchemist's Guild that he starts planning this with. And they begin to hide jars of wildfire all throughout King's Landing. And they hide 100 jars under the Dragon Pit. They hide 100 jars under the Great Sept of Baelor, which we actually got to see in Game of Thrones. He hides some under the Red Keep. He hides some
Easter eggs.
Under each gate.
A little bit there, a little bit over there.
Just make sure the whole city will be destroyed.
Wildfire everywhere.
It was like a final measure to make sure that Robert wouldn't win his throne. Like, he may win the throne, but he's not going to win the throne. He's not going to win the city. And he was able to plan this under everybody's nose. I'm a little confused to when Jaime learned of it, because he knew of it before Arya's tried to start the wildfire plot. Jaime already knew about it. It had been on Jaime's mind because he overheard them. Who hears everything but says nothing, the Knight of the Kingsguard. Lord Carlton Chelstead, he was a master of coin for Aerys Targaryen, and he was loyal to Aerys. And he caught wind of the Tourney of Harrenhal and heard the rumor that this was a front for a great council for the great lords of the realm and Rhaegar Targaryen. So he told Aerys, you should forbid this tourney. But instead, Aerys decides to go to the tourney. Carlton Chelstead goes with him. But he was one of the guys that was feeding into Aerys' paranoia about his son. When John Connington fails at the Battle of the Bells, he's stripped of lands and titles, he's sent to exile, and Carlton Chelstead is made hand to the king. And he really doesn't do much of anything as far as Robert's Rebellion, because at that point in time, Rhaegar returns, and you know they're already making their big play at the Trident. But Carlton Chelstead finds out about the wildfire plot, so he begs and pleads with Aerys to not go through with this. Like, you'll kill everybody. Please don't. And when that doesn't work, then he resigns. And so here's where the timeline kind of gets tricky. This happens right as the Battle of the Trident ends, because when he learns of Rhaegar's death, Carlton Chelstead resigns his office pretty much immediately after. We talked about the wildfire being an aphrodisiac for Aerys. As he watches him burn, then he goes and he rapes Rhaella. And we're assuming that this is when he conceives Daenerys. it's also, like we said before, it's a fortnight between when Tywin marches from from Casterly Rock and arrives at King's Landing's gate. So it's also a fortnight for all of these things to happen, for him to learn about Rhaegar falling at the Trident, for Carlton Chested to learn about the wildfire plot, to confront him, to be burned, for Aerys to get high off of that and rape his sister, wife, queen. And also, which is probably the best move that Aerys has made throughout this whole war, make plan to send away his wife and his son, who's now his heir, Viserys, to the ancient Targaryen island fortress of Dragonstone with Sir Willem Dary. And all that happens within 2 weeks. Less than 2 weeks, because like we said before, they had to be gone long before Tywin shows up.
And this is where I think Rhaella somehow signs off with Jon Dary looking at that Viserys is now the heir and that Rhaegar is no longer the heir. Doesn't he sign off on that?
Willem Dary? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, Willem Dary was like their guy at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And what Willem Dary was his brother. I don't think it's not canon, but it's assumed that his brother is Jonathor Dary of the Kingsguard. And Willem Dary was the master at arms for King's Landing. Mm-hmm. So when Rhaegar had his vision or prophetic dream that he had to become a warrior, he goes to Sir Willem Dary to learn how to fight with sword and lance. So Willem Dary is a good man.
Good man and true.
And true, yeah.
But not of the Kingsguard.
But he's not of the Kingsguard.
Kingsguard does not flee.
Willem Dary, he fled with Rhaella right. And Viserys. So they go to Dragonstone, and it's a good move by Aerys. Where do you think Varys is in all of this? Because we've always been under the assumption that he's Blackfyre.
Right.
And that he's manipulating Aerys to do things that benefit Varys in the long run. So do you think that Varys is telling Aerys to send away his wife and his son? Wouldn't it be easier for Varys to keep them all in the same place if the downfall of House Targaryen is what his ultimate goal is? Do you think Aerys just came up with the idea on his own to send away his wife and his son? It doesn't seem like there's any love between Rhaella and Aerys, but he does have to consider his heir, mm-hmm. which Viserys now is.
Well, Telly, speaking at this point in time, if they don't change it to Viserys, when Rhaegar dies, actually Aegon is the heir.
True.
Unless they already signed off. They didn't know that they're already signing off that Aerys had basically
because
taken away Rhaegar's airship.
Because he was a traitor.
And given to his, because he's all crazy and shit.
Well, that makes sense, because I'm pretty sure when he sends him to Dragonstone, Viserys is his heir. But the Red Keep hasn't been breached yet. And Gregor Clegane hasn't gotten to the children yet. They're still alive and in the nursery with Elia. We've talked about this before, too. This is another battle that kind of happens in between the Battle of the Trident and the Sack of King's Landing. And that's the Battle of the Mander, which is the Greyjoys. And it's kind of funny. What happens is Kellan Greyjoy wanted to remain neutral. He didn't want to get involved. He didn't want to take sides. Mm-hmm. And when news of Rhaegar's death at the Trident reaches Pyke, Baelin, Euron, and Victarion go to their father and say, look, the rebels are going to win. If we don't take a side now, we're going to miss out on all the spoils. And it's his three oldest sons coming up to him and telling him he needs to get involved in the war. So maybe that convinces him. Maybe he's intimidated. Who knows? But he sails, I think it's like 20 long ships. Kellan Greyjoy sees the sense that his sons make and personally leads 50 warships south to attack the Reach, figuring that House Tyrell, House Redwine, House Tarly, they're all over at Storm's End.
Vulnerable.
They didn't know what Tywin Lannister was going to do, so he decides to lead the majority of the Iron Fleet to protect the Iron Islands, if necessary. Seems like Kellan Greyjoy was not a coward, but a lot more fearful than Baelin Greyjoy and Euron Greyjoy. So he takes 50 longships, and he raids the coastal towns and villages of the Reach. He sinks and captures some ships along the way, and it's not a difficult fight on their side until some longships of the Shield Islands show up, and they have a battle at the mouth of the Mander, which is, if you go all the way south in Arryn Islands, it's right above Brightwater Keep, the Shield Islands. Euron returns to them in A Feast for Crows, and those are the Ellis Islands he gives, like Newt the Barber, he makes the lord of one of the Shield Islands. 12 vessels of the Iron Fleet are sunk by the longships from the Shield Islands, and Lord Kellan Greyjoy is slain in battle. As soon as he dies, Baelin Greyjoy decides, our best move now is to retreat back to Pyke so I can claim the Seastone Chair. And that's it. That's their involvement in Robert's Rebellion. Technically, they fought on the side of the rebels, but it seems like more of a
ploy to get Callan killed.
Yeah, so that Baelin could take the Iron Throne. And you know it's Baelin and Euron planning that. Victarion's just a fucking dumbass. You know, he'll just do whatever his brothers say, but knowing Euron, and even knowing Baelin, they didn't like the way that Kellan Greyjoy was ruling the Iron Islands, so they come up with this plot to join the side of the rebels and to get their father killed.
Only the Greyjoys would do quick.
Dude, it's just like typical Greyjoy shit.
Murder the father in the sleep, poison him, nah. Carter go to war and get killed in a battle. Yeah. That's a Greyjoy way.
But it seems that Rhaegar's death has a huge effect on this war because Tywin makes a decision. The Iron Islands make a decision. Arya makes decisions just based on Rhaegar dying.
Walder Frey makes decisions.
Yeah, Walder Frey finally decides to show up. Everybody's getting involved in this war because it looks like the rebels are going to win because Rhaegar has died. Besides,
we're still uneven. The rebels were outnumbered.
Yes, the loyalists still had the advantage, but it's Rhaegar falling that starts this domino effect. So the rebels won their major victory at the Trident, the only major force to oppose their march to King's Landing, knowing that Tywin's marching to King's Landing also is the forces of the Reach, but they're super busy doing absolutely nothing, besieging Storm's End. Jon and myself are going to make, like Mace Windu. Jon and I are going to make like Mace Tyrell and get ourselves a drink. And we will be right back.
You're listening to The Princes That Were Promised, the podcast that tears apart Westeros and sifts through the pieces.
We're back. The Princes That Were Promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan, and with me is Jon. And we are about to walk through the sack of King's Landing. Robert Baratheon, Jon Arryn, Hoster Tully, all of them unsure of Lord Tywin Lannister's intentions. Ned leading the rebellion vanguard. After the Loyalist army retreating to King's Landing, Tywin marching to King's Landing, Arya's with his wildfire plot, it seems like it's going to be an explosive end to this war. And it's no pun intended. It's a wild card. It's something unforeseen and something nobody would think would end the war is what ends the war. Or at least ends Arya's reign, which in turn ends the war. Arya's burned Lord Carlton Chelsted, and he makes Rosart his hand. Rosart is the Grandmaster of the Alchemist Guild and one of the three pyromancers who he's been planning this wildfire plot with. Tywin finally arrives at the gates of King's Landing, and this is a fortnight after the Trident, and he's commanding a force of 12,000 men from the Westerlands. And Lord Tywin tells the City Watch that he's here to help the king and to protect the city from the rebels. Lord Varys, I thought this was interesting, Lord Varys actually tells Arya to not trust Tywin. Don't open the gates. His Grandmaster Pycelle, who says, no, open the gates. He's convinced him that his former hand and childhood friend was there to aid him in his time of need. And Arya's decides to open the gates with Varys. If we believe he's a Blackfyre, why is he telling Arya's to not open the gates? He's got to know that Tywin's going to do what Tywin does. So unless maybe his long game involves, I don't know. Maybe he was just...
He knows Pycelle's going to encourage him to open the gates. And he's just...
Worried for his own...
Yeah.
His own self.
Maybe he's just, you know, preying on emotion that he'll go against him on this.
It's kind of weird though. It makes me think he's not a Blackfyre, but I mean, ultimately, I do think he's a Blackfyre. But essentially, the moment the gates open, the Lannister forces begin to sack the city. They're like, no, we're here to help. Fooled you. Kill that guy. Kill this guy. They begin to sack the city. The soldiers kill people of all ages. Men, women, children. Rape the women. Tywin had a handpicked group of soldiers that were charged with scaling the walls of the Red Keep. So as soon as the gates open, that like Delta Force, Bravo, whatever, they ride straight for the Red Keep and they begin scaling the walls. Jaime Lannister is the only Kingsguard at King's Landing, so he's in charge of the Red Keep's defenses. And when his messenger tells him that the city's being sacked, he realizes that the city's going to fall. They don't have the forces to combat his father.
Right.
So he asks King Arryes for permission to make terms with his father. And Arryes, at this point in time, it seems like he's accepting his fate and he really just wants to burn the city. So he refuses this proposal. He dismisses Jaime. He orders Jaime to bring him Tywin's head. Bring me your father's head or you're just a traitor also. Arryes meets with Rosart, his hand, and he commands him to execute their wildfire plot. So as Jaime is seeing to the Red Keep's defenses, his messenger comes back and he informs him that Rosart has left the king and he's dressed as a common man at arms. And Jaime realizes what's going on because he heard about the wildfire plot. He knew what Rosart was doing and he knows that Rosart leaving disguised, he's going to set off that wildfire because it's now or never for Arryes. Jaime able to catch Rosart before he leaves the Red Keep. Rosart puts up a little bit of a fight, but he's no match for Jaime, and Jaime kills him. Then he goes to the throne room where Arryes is doing whatever, sitting on the throne, and I think it breaks down like this. It's definitely more interesting if it breaks down like this, that Arryes sees the blood on Jaime's sword. He says, whose blood is that? Jaime says, Rosart's.
Aerys gets all wide-eyed and scared because he realizes that Jaime killed Rossart and he's probably going to kill him too. He tries to escape, but Jaime catches up to him, grabs him. According to Jaime POV, like, he pissed and shit himself. He was so scared. Jaime opens his throat with his blade. Since Jaime is not seeing to the defenses of the Red Keep, as this is going on, that force has been able to scale the Red Keep. They go to the nursery, and they raped Ilya, right?
Yeah.
Raped Ilya, killed the kids, killed Ilya, or they did a baby switch. Well, the baby switch was already done. According to Barry's, Aegon was switched out before this.
But like, just keep him out, but already did a baby switch, what's the difference does it make?
Well, I can see with Barry's, he didn't want to seem too eager because he really wanted to protect the fact that he had Aegon, but it's not Aegon. He didn't have Aegon. Ilya, Rhaella, and Aegon are dead.
No, Rhaenys.
Rhaenys. Lannister men enter the throne room and they find Aerys sprawled out dead on the floor. Jaime with the blood on his sword, and Jaime's like, I can't
hide this.
Yeah, I killed King. They're looking at him like, what do we do now? And Jaime orders his father's men to spread the news that Aerys was dead. Lord Crakehall, who's a Westerland lord, he asked Jaime if they should proclaim a new king. The way Lord Crakehall said it, he's like, should we declare a new king? Like, are you king now? Are you saying that you're king? That's fine, but we should know. And for a moment, Jaime considers saying that, yes, Prince Viserys is the king. It's not even that he was thinking about his father or Robert or Rhaegar or anything else. He was just thinking about Aerys and how fucking psychotic he was and how he almost blew up all of King's Landing and realizing that Viserys is his son. Same blood, same genes. So he decides against saying that Viserys is the king. He tells Roland Crakehall, he's like, declare whoever you like. I don't give a shit. And he sits down on a throne with his sword on his knees and he waits to see who will come and claim the Iron Throne. I think that's a fucking awesome visual. It's like he knew the impact of what he had done, killing his king, would have on him for the rest of his life. You know what? Maybe if he declared Viserys as king, he wouldn't be called the Kingslayer. Because in killing Aerys and Robert taking the throne, he essentially ended House Targaryen's reign by killing Aerys. But if he had killed Aerys and said Viserys is the rightful king, then it would have been a different story. He wouldn't have ended the reign of House Targaryen. He would have still killed his king, but that moniker of him being an oathbreaker, a kingslayer, I don't know if that would have stuck with him as much. But for the good of the realm, again, going through his head, he decides against that. And he's like, fuck, I don't care who you guys declare king. I'm just going to wait here. There are Lannister men in there with him, but Ned Stark arrives. He's able to ride straight through the gates, straight through the city, to the Red Keep, into the throne room. And there he finds Jaime on the Iron Throne, and they don't say anything to each other. It's just eyeing him like, he obviously killed his king, and now he's sitting on the Iron Throne. Is he saying he's king? Like, what the fuck is going on here? Is he holding it for Tywin? Like, what's up? What do you think Ned expected going down there, first off? I mean, he didn't know what Tywin was going to do, so maybe he's the kind of guy who prepares for the worst. Maybe he thought Tywin would be waiting to attack him, but instead he arrives and finds that Tywin has taken King's Landing himself. It's not outside the realm of possibility to think that Tywin made a play to put House Lannister on the Iron Throne. Tywin knew that the Lannisters needed a way to prove their loyalty to Robert's cause. Tywin knew that Rhaegar's children had to die to ensure that Robert's claim to the throne was unchallenged. So he sends Gregor Clegane and Armerly Lorch into Maegor's Holdfast, which is like the castle within the castle. They kill the kids. Armerly drags Princess Rhaenys Targaryen from under Rhaegar's bed and stab her 50 times. Gregor smashed the head of the infant Prince Aegon in front of his mother, Princess Ilya, in the nursery, and the Mountain then raped and murdered Ilya with Aegon's brain still on his own hands. That is one bad dude. So when Robert Baratheon finally arrives at King's Landing, Tywin lays the bodies of Ilya, Aegon, and Rhaenys beneath the Iron Throne, and he presents them to Robert as tokens of fealty. The children were wrapped in crimson cloaks to hide the blood. Rhaenys was recognizable. Aegon was a faceless horror of bone and brain and gore, and no one looked long at him, believing Tywin at his word when he stated it was Aegon. The actions of Gregor and Armerly have been discussed in rumor and even considered common knowledge at Casterly Rock. The murders of Ilya and her children have never been publicly confirmed. All right, we're going to end it right there with the sack of King's Landing. When we return next week, we'll talk about the aftermath, House Lannister's end goals, how the rebels get Dorne back into the mix, and head back to Storm's End to find out what's going on with Stannis and Mace Tyrell. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/ThePromisedPrincess. Follow us on Twitter, @PrincessPromised. You can find our writings and in-depth reviews, ThePrincessThatWerePromised.com. You can find us on Tumblr. You can find us on Instagram.
And you can find our podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Castify. Click subscribe. Please leave a review so that other listeners can find us. Thank you for listening. As always, we will speak with you guys next week. Bum, 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 bum,